to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Welcome to episode 56. Today I'm going to be talking about chapter 15 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, the Quidditch final. Another really fun chapter coming up, and I really don't have any, there's no new Wizarding World, Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts news or anything like that. So I can pretty much get right into my little opening spiel. So you guys can email me at the Heiress of Slytherin podcast at gmail.com. Facebook page is the Heiress of Slytherin podcast. Twitter is at Slytherin Pod. You can leave a voice message or donation on the Anchor link, and you can listen to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Anchor, Radio Public, and Pocket Casts. And now I could get into the summary from last week's episode. So last episode, I talked about chapter 14 of Prisoner of Azkaban, which was called Snape's Grudge. And Ron is very much enjoying the attention he's having because he's telling everybody about how Sirius Black was standing over his bed with a knife and he slashed his curtains and all this stuff. Now there's tighter security at Hogwarts. The Fat Lady is back as the Gryffindor portrait entrance. Hagrid has a evening where he talks to Ron and Harry about how they are mistreating Hermione just by like not talking to her and not being there for her and all this stuff. And he also gives them an update on how she's been helping Hagrid. She's been helping him with finding information for his upcoming trial with Buckbeak and everything. And the boys feel guilty because they haven't helped Hagrid at all. There's another Hogsmeade trip, and Harry still sneaks out and uses a secret passage. And it's very irresponsible, very reckless, because Sirius Black is apparently coming after him, trying to kill him. And he was just in Hogwarts. Like, of course, he's probably going to be in Hogsmeade or near Hogsmeade. So very dangerous, but Harry does it. He meets up with Ron by the Shrieking Shack, and he's under his invisibility cloak this time. And while he's there, Malfoy and Crab and Goyle show up, and Harry, being underneath the cloak, being invisible, is throwing mud at them, and Harry's cloak slides off his face, or off his head, and Malfoy sees his face for a split second, so he sprints back to Hogwarts. So that means Harry has to sprint back to Hogwarts to try to make it look like he's been there this whole time, and Ron sprints after him. And basically, Snape catches him near the One-Eyed Witch passageway, which is the secret entrance or exit that Harry was using to get into Hogsmeade. And he has the Marauder's Map with him. Lupin sees it. The map insults Lupin because it's the magic from the Marauders. Remember, that's Harry's dad, James, that's Sirius Black, Peter Pettigrew, aka Scabbers, and Remus Lupin, who is their current Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. It's their magic from like their 15-year-old selves that is insulting Snape. And Snape tells Lupin to come to his office, and he does, and he sees the map, and he's like, oh, this is probably just a Zonko's joke shop, and he covers for Harry. But once he leaves his office, he tells Harry, like, that was such an irresponsible thing for you to do. You hear your parents dying when you see those Dementors, when they come too close to you, and here you are repaying their sacrifice by sneaking out when a killer who's after you is on the loose. And Harry feels absolutely terrible, so does Ron. So he feels guilty, and he knows that he can't be doing stuff like that. And Hermione has something to say to the boys, and Ron thinks that it's going to be gloating and everything, but it's not. She's very upset, and she's holding a letter from Hagrid, and she's saying that the trial did not go well, and Buckbeak will be executed. And that leads us right up to the beginning of this chapter, where the boys see Hagrid's letter to Hermione. And it says, "Dear Hermione, we lost. I'm allowed to bring him back to Hogwarts. Execution date to be fixed. Beaky has enjoyed London. I won't forget all the help you gave us, Hagrid." And the parchment is damp. There's a bunch of tear drops on it. It smudged the ink. Like, Hagrid was very, very sad writing this letter because he loves Buckbeak. Buckbeak's like a pet of his. You know, he absolutely loves Buckbeak, and he's very sad that this is happening, and he's just not in a good place with this, right? But Hermione did help, and the boys did not. And honestly, it just makes me mad. like, yeah, stuff came up and they were busy and they have school and everything, but, and like Harry has Quidditch and all this stuff, but like Hermione has all of that. She's busy too. She has to go back in time in order to attend all her classes. Like, she's busy as well. And it just makes me upset that the boys didn't help Hagrid as much because, you know, whatever reason, busy, they've forgotten everything. But still, like, think of all that Hermione has on her plate and she still helped him. And she also, like, didn't have much support from Harry and Ron. Harry and Ron had each other, but they weren't really speaking with Hermione very much. Like, it's been on and off, right? They've been going through a rough patch. So I feel bad for Hagrid right now because they didn't help, but I'm glad he acknowledges that Hermione really was such a big help and she did spend a lot of time and effort trying to help Hagrid with this trial. And also, this is another part too where I really do like having a good hard copy of the books. And I encourage you to do so if you want to read along and everything, because you see different fonts, like whether it be newspaper articles and letters and stuff. Like, here's Hagrid's handwriting. It's a different font and it's like a letter. And I just like having the hard copy for those reasons. Among others, I love hard copies of books, but it's just nice seeing a different fonts. And Harry says, they can't do this. Buckbeak isn't dangerous. Like, they can't do this. And Hermione's saying that Lucius Malfoy, of course, you know, that he was going to be there because this is all Draco's fault. She's saying that Lucius frightened the committee into doing it. They're all these old fools and they were scared of him. And she's saying there's going to be an appeal because there always is, but like nothing will have changed. I don't have any hope for it. And Ron, who decides now to, you know, start being nice to Hermione again, he says fiercely, yeah, it will. Like, you won't have to do all the work alone this time, Hermione. I'll help. And that makes Hermione cry even more. She's like, oh, Ron, and she flings her arms around his neck and is crying and just completely breaks down, just sobbing. And Ron is just standing there looking terrified, and he's just awkwardly patting her head. And then when Hermione finally lets go of him, she's still crying, but she's saying, Ron, I'm really, really sorry about Scabbers. Like, you know, the first time she said this in months, you know. And Ron, he's actually relieved that she let go of him. Remember, he's a 13-year-old boy, you know? So he's relieved that she let go of him. And he's like, oh, well, he was old. He was a little useless. And maybe now I'll get an owl. Like, you never know. So I am glad that they made up. But I'm not glad that it took an impending death for them to finally make up and for Ron to say something that wasn't mean to her, you know? And also, like, Harry, the whole firebolt thing was more Harry, but Ron was also mad at Hermione for that too. And I think Scabbers was more of Ron's thing, but Harry kind of also felt like it was Hermione's cat's fault, like Crookshank's fault anyways. So Harry, I feel like he was kind of in the middle of this, and Hermione just knew he wanted to hang out with Ron anyways, but still, like, I don't know. This whole thing, it could have just been handled so differently, but it wasn't. But they're 13-year-olds, and they've made up now, and they're going to move on. They're going to help Hagrid with what needs to be done. So they're talking to Hagrid one day, like a few days after this, during Care of Magical Creatures, and Hagrid's telling him, well, you know, Harry, Ron, Hermione, that he completely froze up during the trial. He forgot what to say. He dropped his notes and they were all out of order. And he also says that there's no hope, but he just wants Buckbeak's remaining time left alive to just be happy. And he wants it to be his happiest time ever. And that's a good point of view of Hagrid's. Like, I don't like that he feels hopeless, but I mean, it's kind of a positive, not positive spin, but I'm glad that he's like saying, like, I need to just be here for Buckbeak now and focus on making the rest of his time left the happiest he'll ever have. And Ron is still saying, like, there's still the appeal, don't give up, like, we're working on it. Like, the same thing he said to Hermione, like, we're gonna work on it and let's keep the hope for this appeal. After Care of Magical Creatures class, they're walking back up to the castle. Hagrid is with them, of course. They have to be accompanied everywhere with a teacher. especially because of the Sirius Black, the second break-in, like there's more security and everything, more safety measures. And so just walking up to the castle, Hagrid saying like, it's no good. The committee's in Lucius Malfoy's pocket. Like, I just gotta give Buckbeak his happiest time, you know? And he is walking back to his cabin, you know, sobbing or using his handkerchief, you know, all of that. And as the trio goes like into the castle, inside the castle doors, they see that Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle had been standing just inside the doors, listening, like inside the castle doors. And Malfoy's saying, have you ever seen anything quite as pathetic? And he's supposed to be our teacher. And Harry and Ron both make moves towards Malfoy, you know, presumably to maybe hit him or something. I don't know. But Hermione gets there first and she smacks him. She slaps him across the face with all the strength that she could muster. And Malfoy staggers back. And Harry, Ron, Crabbe, and Goyle, they're all like shocked. They don't really know what to do. And Hermione raises her hand up again and she tells Malfoy, don't you dare call Hagrid pathetic. You foul, you evil. And Hermione like kind of makes a move towards Malfoy again, and Ron grabs her and like tries to grab her hand as she's swinging it back. Hermione tells him to get off and she pulls out her wand, and Malfoy steps back because he knows like if Hermione's pulling out her wand, you best run off. Like, you have no chance there. So he just tells Crabbe and Goyle, like, come on, let's go. And they go down the passageway that leads them to their common room. You better run, Malfoy. Like, Hermione will mess you up if she does. She can do some damage with that wand for sure. And Malfoy just doesn't realize that he's actually the one that's so pathetic. He always tries to make it seem like he's so superior to everybody because of being a pureblood and being in Slytherin and all this stuff. And he doesn't realize that he's genuinely the one that always looks just so dumb because he's just rude. And like, Malfoy has so many layers that I'll get into in all these years as I'm doing this podcast, but he doesn't realize that he's the one that looks just dumb all the time. And I really wish Ron wouldn't have stopped her. He wouldn't have like held her back, because I would have loved to see what spell she would have done or what she would have cursed him with. But, you know, Malfoy would have gone straight to Snape, and she could have gotten in trouble even if she had changed him back, or, you know, so there would have been unlucky consequences probably. But still, like, it probably wouldn't have worked because she might have done some real damage with her wand out. Like, who knows what spell she would have done to him. But I do absolutely love this part in the movie, and it is different. Like, I think it's better in the movie. Not that this isn't good in the book, but just like, I'll talk about it more when I do my book to movie comparison episode. But in the movie, it's a little bit later in the book. It's getting towards like when Buckbeak is about to die and everything, and I just think it's really well done in the movie. So after she slaps him, and Malfoy and Crabbe and Goyle smartly decide to walk away, Ron just keeps saying Hermione. Like, he is so stunned and so impressed by her for slapping Malfoy, which is what most people at that school probably want to do, with the exception of the Slytherins. And Hermione is just saying, Harry, you'd better beat him in that Quidditch final. Like, you need to beat him. I can't stand it if Slytherin wins. That's how the whole school feels, except for Slytherin. Like, no one could stand it if Slytherin wins, because the school doesn't like the Slytherins. They're mean, you know? And I'm a Slytherin. That's my house, you know? But, like, they're just mean. And again, like, being mean is not, like, a requirement of being in Slytherin. That's not it at all. But the way that the books were written, we're reading from Harry's point of view, like, you know, that's what he thinks of them because he has such bad experiences with them, like with Snape and with Malfoy. But anyways, Hermione's like, you better beat him. I can't stand it if Slytherin wins that Quidditch match. And Ron, who's still really impressed with Hermione, is like, well, we have charms right now. We'd better go. And once they get there, Professor Flitwick says, you're late, boys. So the boys are like, what? And they see that Hermione is not with them. And she hadn't even entered the classroom, but Harry knew that she was standing right next to him when he had opened the door. Like, literally when he opened the door, she was right next to him. Then suddenly, she's not there anymore. So Harry and Ron are both confused because she was literally just right there. And they're like thinking, okay, maybe she went to the bathroom or something. But during charms class, they did cheering charms. That's what they were practicing. And it cheered them up. Like, it was, they were feeling good. They were already feeling kind of good because Hermione just slapped Malfoy. But still, like, the cheering charms made them kind of happy. They were smiling at everything. And Ron's like, well, she could have done with the cheering charm on her too. Like, you know, they were feeling really content. Great contentment is like how their mood is described. But Hermione wasn't there the entire lesson. She wasn't at lunch either. And by the time they were having their dessert, they were having some apple pie after lunch. And their cheering charms were starting to wear off. So they were starting to get pretty worried. And totally understandable. Like, they just got Hermione back. Like, they're back to, like, speaking with her and everything. She just slapped Malfoy and suddenly she's not there anymore. Like, of course they're going to kind of be concerned. Also, I do want to say, cheering charms, that sounds amazing. Like, that would be such a great, useful spell to know. What a great charm. Like, another reason I wish Harry Potter was real was, like, obviously the magic and, like, spells and stuff. But, like, a cheering charm, I would love to be able to just cast that on myself or on other people. Like, that would be so cool. But they get to the common room, past the new security trolls and into the fat lady's portrait. The new password is Flibbertigibbet, but, you know, hopefully Neville can remember that because it's not going to be changing as often as Circa Jackets was. But when they get into the common room, Hermione's sitting at a table and she's asleep. Her head's resting on her arithmetic book. She was, like, doing homework or studying. So they sit next to her and Harry, like, wakes her up. He's poking her and Hermione's like, oh, is it time to go? What lesson have we got now? And Harry's saying divination, but it's not for another 20 minutes. And he asks her, like, Hermione, why didn't you go to charms? And Hermione's like, what? Oh, I forgot to go to charms. And Harry's telling her, how could you forget? You were with us until we were right outside of the classroom. Literally, like, right when I opened the door. And Hermione's like, oh, I don't believe it. Was Professor Flitwick angry? Like, because that's what she's worried about. Like, I didn't do it on purpose. Like, was he mad? And then she was like, oh, it was Malfoy. I was thinking about him and I lost track of things, you know? I mean, which is kind of fair. She was thinking about him after slapping him and she was so mad and angry and worked up. So, you know, kind of believable. So Hermione starts to gather up all her stuff and Ron just looks at her homework and the enormous book that she was using as a pillow. And he tells her, you know what, Hermione? I reckon you're cracking up. You're trying to do too much. Ron's completely right. She really is. She's, with all her classes and everything, like, she has really, she's doing a lot. And it's been getting to her for weeks now, but this is one of the points where it's even clearer. Like, this is all really getting to you. And Hermione is like, no, I'm not doing too much. Like, I just made a mistake. That's all. And so she says that she needs to go apologize to Professor Flitwick and she'll see them in divination. So Hermione meets the boys at the ladder, like, going into the divination classroom, and she's even saying, like, I can't believe that I missed cheering charms. They're probably going to be on our exams because Professor Flitwick hinted that they might. And it's like, yeah, but you can go back in time and be there for that lesson, Hermione, so it'll be okay. But, of course, she can't tell the boys that. So now they're climbing up the ladder. They're in the classroom. And Professor Trelawney tells them that they're going to be starting crystal balls. And even Ron's a little confused because he remembers her saying that they weren't going to do them until next term. But Trelawney tells them that she wants them to start going over crystal balls earlier because the Fates told her that their test in June will concern the orb. Harry is like, whatever. I'm fine with moving on because that means that we finished palmistry, and he was getting tired of her, like, flinching every time that she looked at his hands because, you know, she predicted he was going to die and everything. So Of course, Hermione makes a good point with Trelawney saying that the Fates informed her that, like, for the test in June, it's going to concern the orb, so she wants to get them practice. And Hermione makes a pretty good logical point, as Hermione does. She's saying, like, of course the Fates have informed her. Who sets the exam? She does. She's the teacher. She's the one who writes the test. And she's like, what an amazing prediction. And she's not trying to, like, she's not whispering this. She might not be trying to, like, advertise her opinion super loudly, but she's not keeping her voice down, that's for sure. Harry and Ron are trying to keep their voices down, or I guess their laughs down. They're trying not to laugh. And even if Trelawney heard Hermione, she doesn't, like, give any indication that she did. And she goes on to explain more about the crystal gazing. She says that it's a really refined art, and she doesn't expect any of them to see, like, when they first look into the orb, because it has these infinite depths, and they're just going to start by, like, relaxing their minds and their mind's eye and everything. You have to clear the inner eye and everything. So that's kind of what she's saying. And they start, and Harry feels extremely foolish to just be staring blankly into a crystal ball and trying to keep his mind empty. But thoughts such as, this is stupid, keep coming into his mind. And I think that's absolutely so hilarious. And that's so Harry too. And that's so me. Like, so many times, any given day, I'll just think, this is so stupid, or this is stupid, or, like, something. Like, that just always comes across my mind. So I think it's funny that it keeps happening for Harry. And Ron keeps, like, breaking into, like, little fits of laughter because he thinks it's dumb too. Like, they're just staring into a blank crystal ball, nothing's happening. And Hermione keeps getting impatient and everything. And after 25 minutes, Harry's like, well, have you guys seen anything? And Hermione says that this is a waste of time. Again, how I feel so many times throughout the day. But she says, this is a waste of time. And she's thinking, I could be practicing something useful, like cheering charms. And it's kind of true. Like, sometimes if I've been in, like, in a class before where I'm like, well, this isn't very important or relevant or even time sensitive, so I'm going to focus on something else. I'm going to study another subject. Like, so I kind of get Hermione's point there. But Professor Trelawney walks past them and she's like, will anyone like to tell me, or, like, does anyone want me to help them interpret what's going on in their crystal ball? And their orb and everything. And Ron whispers, like, oh, I don't need help. It's obvious what this means. There's going to be loads of fog tonight. And Harry and Hermione just burst out laughing. And again, like, I think things are funnier when you're not supposed to laugh, but they didn't even try not to laugh. They just burst out laughing. And I'm glad they're talking and being friends again and everything, but just, this is not a good time. Of course, their burst of laughter catches the attention of Professor Trelawney, and she looks in their direction and she says that they're disturbing the clairvoyant vibrations. And she's walking up to their table, and right away Harry's heart just, like, falls, because he's pretty sure he knows what this means. Because anytime Professor Trelawney looks at anything of his in divination, it's always bad news. It always has to do with the Grim or his death or something like that. And remember, Harry has seen this dog multiple times that is a death omen, that is the Grim. So he doesn't want to hear this. This is extra stress for him. He doesn't need this right now. But she looks into their crystal ball, into the orb, and she's saying, something's moving. And Harry's even like, okay, I'm prepared to bet, like, even my firebolt that this is going to be bad news, whatever it is that she has to say. So Professor Trelawney looks into the orb, and she looks at Harry, and she says that it's plainer than ever before. Like, it's stalking towards you, getting closer. And she starts to say the Grim, but Hermione cuts her off very loudly and says, oh, for goodness sakes, not that ridiculous Grim again. And Professor Trelawney looks up to Hermione, and you can see Frivardi and Lavender, like, whispering to each other. Remember, they really like divination, and they really respect Professor Trelawney. They really respect the divination arts and everything, and so they're not fans of Hermione, like, in this class. So, you know, they're whispering to each other and everything, and they're glaring at Hermione. Professor Trelawney is also glaring at Hermione. Like, everyone can tell she is very angry right now. And She tells Hermione, sorry to say, but like from the very moment that you walked in here into my class, it was very apparent that you do not have what the noble art of divination requires. Indeed, I don't remember ever meeting a student whose mind was so hopelessly mundane. That's what she tells Hermione. That's pretty rough because everyone knows Hermione is the smartest one in that class, the smartest one in their year, probably in the whole school. Hermione is incredibly smart. So hearing this right now was just, this was not great for Hermione. And Hermione was already getting annoyed and mad, and Professor Trelawney was certainly mad, and she just made Hermione even angrier. And the room was just like silent for a second, just completely silent. So after a moment, Hermione's like, okay, fine. And she gets like her book, The Unfogging of the Future, that's their divination textbook. She just grabs it and she shoves it into her bag and she says, fine, I give up, I'm leaving. And the whole class is just amazed by this. Hermione just gets up, she walks to the trapdoor, kicks it open, and climbs down the ladder out of sight. And it takes a while for the class to like settle down again. They're just like talking about it because that was bold of Hermione. Yeah, she's a Gryffindor, so she's, you know, brave and bold and has nerve. But that was pretty big to do. Hermione is the last student that anybody would have ever thought would have skipped class or like left class, quit a class. Like that's the last person anybody would have thought would have done that. And Lavender suddenly is saying, oh, Professor Trelawney, like, I remembered you saw her leaving, didn't you? You, like, she predicted, like, back when the school year started that around Easter, one of your number will leave us forever. And she was like, you said that, Professor. And Professor Trelawney, who probably didn't even remember that, says, oh, yes, my dear, like, I did indeed know that Miss Granger would be leaving us. I hoped that I like had mistaken the signs, but my inner eye can be a burden, you know. And Lavender and Pavardi are so impressed by Professor Trelawney and everything, but Harry is still thinking about the Grimm. Like he's wondering if that's really what Professor Trelawney saw in the orb, like the Grimm getting closer to him, because that would mean his death is getting closer, and that makes Harry really nervous. Like, in case she actually did see the Grimm, like she was telling the truth and she did see the Grimm in that orb, because the Quidditch final is coming up. He really does not need a near fatal accident again. Like he doesn't have time for this. He really cannot have a scary incident like this again. And then Easter, remember, like that's when she predicted around Easter, one of our number will leave us forever. And that was Hermione, apparently, around Easter. And the Easter holidays come up, and they're not very relaxing. The third years just have so, so, so much homework. Imagine, like, all the third years have a lot of homework, but imagine Hermione. Imagine all of the homework she has, like, two or three times as much as all the third years. Like, oh, I feel for her right now. And they're all struggling. And even Neville, it looks like he's about to have a nervous breakdown. Like he's on the verge of it. He's very close. And he's not the only one. He really isn't. But Neville is also somebody who, he's Neville. Like, you know, he's more stressed and he's very forgetful and everything to begin with. So, of course, he's going to be one of the first to show signs of, you know, having a breakdown. Neville is not the only one who's stressed. Everybody is stressed. Like, it's insane. They've never felt like this before. But Seamus also, just one afternoon in the common room, he just like yells out, they call this a holiday. The exams are ages away. What are they playing at? And it might seem ages away to them, but they're really not. They have like a month, 2 months left, which maybe seems like a lot. I guess it's just me. Like that does not seem like ages left. So I understand like all the homework they're getting right now to help prepare them. Of course, nobody has nearly as much work as Hermione because she, all of her subjects that she's taking Even now that she quit divination, she still has more subjects than anybody else. She is the very last one to leave the common room. She's the first one in the library in the mornings. She looks like she's constantly close to tears, like she is so stressed. And I totally feel for Hermione. I know how that goes, like just constantly being stressed over school, despite people saying like, oh, you're so smart, you'll be fine, and you're still feeling so stressed and close to having breakdowns. Ron is the one who now has taken responsibility for like working on Buckbeak's appeal. So when he's not doing his own homework, he's reading books like The Handbook of Hippogriff Psychology and Foul, A Study of Hippogriff Brutality. Like, he's so absorbed in doing that, he even forgets to be mean to Crookshanks. So you can tell that that shows Ron is very distracted. And also, like, he kind of should be taking responsibility for the appeal because he doesn't have a million subjects like Hermione, and he's not playing Quidditch like Harry. Harry is also super busy because he has to fit in homework around Quidditch practice every day and just endless discussions with Wood telling him all like the strategy that he has to know for the game. Slytherin is in the lead by exactly 200 points, and Wood constantly reminds the team that they need to win by more than that amount to win the cup. That's how like the scoring system works. And that also means like the burden of winning really falls on Harry. And it always does. It usually falls on the Seekers, you know. That they're a big part of winning, of course. But Harry like can only catch the Snitch if they're more than 50 points up. Like, Wood's done all the math. He has it all figured out. But he keeps reminding Harry, like, you need to wait. We'll do what we have to do, but you cannot catch the Snitch until we're more than 50 points up. They'll win the match, but they'll lose the cup. That's just how the scoring system works in Quidditch. Catching the Snitch it usually means you win a match, but it's not always guaranteed because the Snitch gives you 150 points and it ends the game. But if the other team is way more ahead in points, like, and you catch a Snitch, they're more than 150 points ahead, and you catch a Snitch, yeah, you, like, end the game, but you also lose the game. But in this case, they would win the match but lose the cup because of, like, the points and everything. In fact, in the next book for the Quidditch Cup, Victor Crumb, when they're playing, that's, like, the absolute finals of professional Quidditch around the world and everything, when they're playing in the Quidditch World Cup, Victor Crumb's team, Bulgaria, they're more than 150 points behind, and he decides to catch the Snitch to end the game on his own terms, even though his team was losing. So it was controversial and everything, but that's what he did. But my point that I'm making here is, like, the Quidditch scoring system can get a little convoluted sometimes. This also shows how tactical you have to be and how strategic you have to be, and, you know, pretty much in any sport. But especially like in Quidditch here, I mean, the beaters absolutely have to be on their game. Everybody does. Wood, Oliver, he's the keeper. He needs to make sure he doesn't let very many goals get through, right? And then the chasers, they have to score the goals. They have to earn their team the points, enough points so they're more than 50 up. And then the beaters, those are the twins, Fred and George, they have to try to knock off the other team, the Slytherins, chasers, off their brooms, because that way they won't score as many points. Or even maybe that they hit the Slytherin keeper as well so that he can't stop as many goals from going through. Like, there's so many like ways you can play it, and I totally, like, I don't doubt at all that Oliver doesn't tell Fred and George like strategies and everything to knock everybody else off and things like that. But I'm sure too, like, Fred and George, they're Fred and George. Like, they have minds of their own, even though they have like the same mind pretty much. They're so similar. And I don't doubt that they also have like their own strategies and stuff too. And they talk about it and they come up with ways and plays and just different things like that. Like, I totally feel like they would do that as well. But Oliver, like, he's been annoying this whole book, but especially annoying right now. He's very much annoying Harry. He just keeps repeating the exact same thing. Like, only for more than 50 points up, or we win the match but lose the cup. Like, you have that, right? You have to catch a snitch, but only. And Harry finally one day just screams at him, "I know, Oliver, like, stop." And the entire Gryffindor house, despite everyone being so busy with all their homework and studying, they're just absolutely obsessed with the upcoming match. They haven't won in a few years since the oldest Charlie, or he's the second oldest Weasley brother, Charlie. So, of course, like, that's Ron's second oldest brother. And same with Fred and George and Percy and Ginny, you know, all the Weasleys, of course. But the only brother older than Charlie is Bill. But Charlie, he was a seeker. He won the Quidditch Cup for Gryffindor when he was at school. And he was really good. And a lot of people thought maybe he was going to start playing, like, professionally. But he works in Romania with dragons. So that was, like, that whole thing in the first book with Norbert, when Harry, Ron, Hermione, they arranged for Norbert to be taken out of Hogwarts and everything. And that was so that Charlie could take him. Charlie didn't personally go, but Charlie's friends did. Either way, they were still communicating with him. And then Charlie, he'll come up again in the next book, because there's going to be some dragons for the Triwizard Tournament. It's going to be super exciting. But the entire Gryffindor house is just, they're all super anxious and obsessed with winning, of course. Harry, you know, he really, really, really wants to win too, because, you know, there's kind of like some bad blood between Harry and Malfoy. It's like at the absolute highest point ever. Like, it's their animosity for each other has never been higher, has never been at a higher level. Like, Malfoy is still upset that, like, about the mud throwing incident, you know, and he's even more furious that Harry got out of it. He didn't get in trouble, no punishment or anything like that. And Harry's super mad at Malfoy too, because he remembers Malfoy tried to sabotage him in the match against Ravenclaw. Remember, like, him, Crabbe and Goyle, and Marcus Flint, they dressed up as Dementors and went onto the field. Like, I talked about this when it happened in a few episodes ago, because it was just so dumb. But also, like, McGonagall, you should have been, like, I don't think their punishment was enough. I really think that she should have made them, like, lose more points. And also, they should have been, like, disqualified from the Quidditch Cup at Hogwarts. I think that would have been a fair punishment. Because why are they trying to sabotage another team, and then you're still going to be allowed to play against that team? And, like, you also, that Slytherin said team, right? Slytherin team, they also didn't play in the first match because of the weather, but they made an excuse about Malfoy's arm. Like, I don't know. I just don't know why they're even allowed to play. Or maybe it should have been just Malfoy and Marcus that weren't allowed to play, and then they had to play with five players, or they had to maybe even get, like, two alternates or just five players. Like, you know what I mean? There's just, I don't think that punishment was enough. And the thing that is making Harry most determined to beat Malfoy is the fact, like, the whole Buckbeak situation. Like, that just makes him so mad. And that is making him even more eager to win this cup and beat Malfoy. As we know, with many examples throughout these books, Slytherins like to play dirty. I mean, I just mentioned Malfoy and Marcus and Crabbe and Goyle dressing up as Dementors. And you know what I mean? Like, they like to play dirty during the games. They do a lot of fouls. It's just a lot, right? But the entire Slytherin house is starting to partake in that too. They're starting to play dirty. I mean, it's bigger than just Harry and Malfoy. Like, it's the whole Gryffindor house. It's the whole Slytherin house. They each want to win, like, so badly. The house pride is huge. And not only that, but it's also, like, they just don't like each other. Like, it's more, it goes deeper than just the pride. They also really, really do not want Gryffindor to win. And Gryffindor really, really does not want Slytherin to win. Like, both houses don't think they could stand it if the other team were to win. And there's, like, a bunch of small scuffles that are starting to break out between the houses, like, randomly in the corridors. There's even one incident where a Gryffindor fourth year and a Slytherin sixth year end up in the hospital wing because they were, like, cursing each other, and now they have leaks coming out of their ears. Like, there's some stuff going on. Harry, of course, is having such is having a hard time with it because everybody is trying to sabotage him. Like, the Slytherins must not be very confident in their own seeker or their own team and their ability to win, because they're trying to sabotage Harry. People are trying to trip Harry everywhere, like randomly sticking their legs out. Crab and Goyle keep popping up everywhere and looking disappointed if he's surrounded by like a bunch of people. Oliver has given Harry instructions saying that you need to be followed everywhere, but somebody has to be around you at all times. Like, you need security around you is basically what Oliver is thinking. You need to be followed everywhere. You need to have crowds like around you, just in case the Slytherins try to put you out of action. And I mean, there's magic, so even if someone were to injure Harry, he could probably recover fairly quickly. But still, some things are harder to recover from than others, right? So, like, if it was a broken bone, super fast. If it was regrowing bones, like a weekend. But they're running out of time. Like, they can't afford to have unforeseen things happen to Harry. Like, that's, they cannot have that. And the whole Gryffindor house is up for the challenge. They're like, okay, we're gonna guard Harry, we're gonna like go with him everywhere, because like, we all mean business. And like, it's almost impossible for Harry to get everywhere because he's always surrounded by a huge crowd. It's his own house, like, keeping him safe pretty much. Harry is also starting to get more concerned for his Firebolt safety. And rightfully so. I mean, they're going to try to sabotage Harry and that broom for sure, because they're all jealous he has the best broom in the world. And whenever he's not flying it, he always locks it very securely in his trunk. And he frequently, like when he has breaks, he'll go back up to Gryffindor Tower to his dormitory to make sure that it's still there. And it makes sense, but also, like, he could have put more protection around it than just locking it. Like, I want to know exactly how he locked it, because there are, like, shielding charms and stuff that he could have used as well. But either way, it's secure for now. And the night before the match, like, the energy in the Gryffindor common room is insane. No one is even thinking about all their studying and homework they have to do. Even Hermione, she's like, I can't work, I can't concentrate. She's too nervous. They're all just so anxious. There's a lot of noise, a lot of excitement. Oliver is in the corner and he has like a model of a Quidditch field, and he's like tapping his wand around, moving the figures around it, like talking to himself. Fred and George are, you know, they're being loud and they're making jokes and everything. Angelina, Alicia, and Katie, they're also laughing at the jokes. So, of course, that's all the team except for Harry. Like, that's how they're all coping with the pre-night's excitement and everything. And Harry is just sitting with Ron and Hermione, trying not to think about the match, because every time he does, he has, like, a horrible feeling in his stomach. And Ron and Hermione are like, you're going to be fine, even though they look a little worried. Or Hermione, I guess, specifically, she looks terrified. And he's just like, yeah. And he's really trying to like concentrate on everything, not on the match, but just concentrating on staying calm. And it's a relief when Oliver suddenly like stands up and yells, team, okay, Quidditch team, like time to go to bed, you know. So he's very much focused. He's laser focused for sure. Harry sleeps so badly the night before the match. He has different dreams, or I guess they're a little bit more of nightmares. Not like the nightmares he gets in these books, like that aren't related to Quidditch. He has some pretty bad nightmares of Voldemort and everything. But these dreams aren't good right now, for sure. He dreams, like at first, that he overslept and Oliver was yelling at him, where were you? We had to use Neville instead. Like, Neville would be the last person everybody would consider, that's for sure. And also, nobody would let Harry oversleep in the whole Gryffindor Tower. Like, it would not happen. The next dream he has is that the whole Slytherin team arrives for their match on dragons. And, like, even Harry on his Firebolt, who is or he thinks he's on his fireball in the dream, and he's like flying at the fastest speed, trying to avoid the fire that's coming from Malfoy's dragon. Then he realizes he forgot his firebolt, and then he wakes up and he remembers, like, okay, they definitely won't be allowed to ride on dragons. My firebolt is locked under in my trunk underneath my bed safely. They are not going to use Neville. Like, there's so many things. And he's like, I'm thirsty, let me get up, get some water. And then he looks out the window, just, you know, the weather looks nice for the match in a few hours. He's like, okay, this is good. And then he sees, and also again, like, Harry doesn't have his glasses on right now, so he can't see, like, extremely well. But he does see, like, this animal-like shape walking across the lawn, like, outside. And Harry is like, wait, no, this cannot be the Grim. Not now, not before this huge match. So Harry runs and snatches his glasses, and he sees it's just Crookshanks walking across the lawn. Then he's like, oh, wait, no, there's something else too. And from the trees emerges the big, shaggy black dog that he's been seeing. That's supposedly the Grim. It's walking with Crookshanks, like, just like they're buddies. They're just walking across the lawn together. And so Harry's thinking, oh, wait, if Crookshanks can see this dog too, then is it actually an omen of my death? Like, and, you know, that's pretty good thinking, in my opinion. Like, for Harry to have been so anxious before, and now he's seeing this and he's thinking, like, oh, okay, wait, maybe it's not as drastic as I had thought it was. So he's like, okay, Ron, wake up. And he shakes Ron awake, and he's like, I need you to tell me if you can see something. And Ron, who, it's like, it's all dark, Harry, like, what are you talking about? And Harry points out the window, like, look. And both Crookshanks and the dog are not there anymore. And Harry's like climbing onto the windowsill, looking like along the wall and everywhere, and he can't see them anywhere in sight. And he just hears Ron snoring again. Like, Ron was awake for maybe 4 seconds and then right back to sleep. But Harry did in fact see Crookshanks, and he did see the dog. Remember, that dog is Sirius's animagus form, and they are kind of friends, I guess. Like, Crookshanks has been helping Sirius into the castle, of course, like, in his dog form, and that's also why Crookshanks was trying to get Scabbers and kill Scabbers, because of what Sirius in his dog form was informing Crookshanks of. So Harry, you weren't seeing things. They really were there. They just happened to run away really quick before you could show Ron or anything. Like, they ran away really fast. So, you know, a few hours later, Harry and the rest of the Gryffindor team, they go into the Great Hall for breakfast. And it's just a huge round of applause because the Gryffindor house is cheering for them. The Hufflepuff house is. And so are Ravenclaw. Like, everybody wants Slytherin to lose. They want Gryffindor to win 100%. And I love this. They're just all so against the Slytherins winning. Again, like, that's my house. But I'm just glad that they're all coming together to be like, okay, we don't want Slytherin to win. We need you guys to win. Like, the whole school could not stand it if Slytherin won. So they're all cheering for Gryffindor for sure. And the Slytherin table is, like, hissing as they pass the Slytherin table, which I think is weird. Like how cats hiss. Like, is that what they're doing? I don't know. I think it sounds kind of weird, but that's what's going on. And Harry even sees Malfoy looking paler. Like, yeah, we know that Harry has been feeling the pressure for sure, but imagine Malfoy too. Like, he's probably feeling a lot of pressure as well. I'm sure Marcus has been getting on him too, because he's lost to Harry every time he's played against him. And Harry has a firebolt now, you know? So, like, if you think about it, like, that's probably why he looks so pale. He's very much nervous as well, but he's going to try not to act like it. That's what he's going to do. So Oliver is telling his team, like, throughout breakfast, like, urging them to eat. Like, make sure you guys eat. You need your strength. But he's not eating himself. Like, he's just so nervous as well. Like, he can't do it. And after a while, after still not having breakfast, before anybody else finishes their breakfast, he says that he's going to go out into the field to get a good idea of the conditions, you know, just walk around the field, fly around the field, make sure everything's good. And Oliver Wood, like, he loves Quidditch more than anything. He's in his last year at Hogwarts. It is his last chance to win the cup. They have a good chance of winning. He is, imagine how he's feeling. This is all coming to fruition finally in his last year, even though they could have won the last 2 years. And he just wants to win so badly. He's so ready to do so. And he, like, that's why he's so nervous to eat. That's why he's been getting on Harry, getting on the whole team. That's why he hasn't been, like, a great captain, maybe, because he's just so adamant on winning. Like, he just needs to win so, so badly. And I get it. Like, I was an athlete for, like, most of my life, from seventh grade all throughout college, like, high school, all throughout college, everything. So I understand, like, feeling like you need to win and wanting to win so badly and wanting that, like, more than anything. I totally understand that. I just don't think Oliver was always, like, super great with how he, you know, treated his teammates because of that. He wasn't always there for them. You know, I've talked about it so much throughout this book, throughout these episodes, because he just made me so mad sometimes. But I really understand him at this as well, like, at least in this moment, where he's probably going to go to the field, walk around, fly around, and just kind of take it all in. Like, be like, okay, like, this is my last time here, my last time playing for Gryffindor at Hogwarts on this field. Like, I'm going to give it my all. Like, you know, he's probably doing, like, a ritual or something. Like, he's doing what he can to prepare himself. Like, he probably just needs, like, a moment alone on that field. That's what I'm thinking he's doing. And even the whole team is probably realizing that too. Like, they know to just give him a moment. So as they're leaving the Great Hall, everyone except the Slytherins are cheering and clapping for them again. Even Cho Chang, remember the Ravenclaw seeker that Harry just beat in the last team or the last match? She even tells him good luck, and Harry, like, feels himself blushing because he's starting to like her. He has a little crush on her. And once they get to the field, like, into the locker room, Oliver is telling them, like, all of the weather conditions and how the ground feels. Like, it's going to give us a fast kickoff, and he's pacing the field and all this stuff. And so they were on the field during this, but then the whole school starts to come out, and as people are, like, filling the stands, they're like, okay, Oliver's like, okay, we're going to the locker room. Like, we need to be in our own space right now. And they're starting to change into their robes, and even Harry, they're all so nervous, and Harry feels like his stomach, like, he had eaten something wriggly, and something's, like, moving inside his stomach. That's how nervous he is. They're all so nervous. And when they get back out onto the field, it's just a huge wave of noise. It's three houses cheering for them, and it's only the Slytherins cheering for the Slytherins. So the energy is just insane. There are so many Gryffindor flags with, like, the Gryffindor lion on them, and they have banners with things that say, like, go Gryffindor, and lions for the cup. I mean, they're so excited. And 3/4 of the crowd is wearing scarlet. They're wearing the Gryffindor colors because they're supporting Gryffindor. And Slytherin, however, like, it says 200 people wearing green. That's what it said in the book. So, you know, 200, say, just say there's 200 people in Slytherin, which I don't know if that's really accurate. I don't think it is. But again, I didn't write this book. This is straight from the author's words here on the page. So 200, I mean, you know, what am I going to argue with, right? But 200 people were wearing green, and they have, like, the silver serpent of Slytherin, like, on the flags and everything. Snape is in the very front row wearing green like everybody else, like the emerald green, which I almost can't imagine because I'm just so used to the movies of Alan Rickman wearing all black all the time. But imagine Snape just wearing, like, the emerald green. I would have liked to see that, like, have him worn emerald green. I mean, we did see him wear a little bit of green when he was, like, the Boggart version of himself for Neville, but that doesn't really count. But, you know, everybody is, the energy is just absolutely electric, and the game is about to begin. And once it does, of course, Lee Jordan is the one doing the commentating, and you hear boos come from the Slytherin's end when he's mentioning things about the Gryffindors. Madam Hooch is the referee for this match, and when she tells the captains to shake hands, as is supposed to happen for every match, Flint and Wood, like Oliver Wood, of course, the Gryffindor captain, and Marcus Flint, that's the Slytherin captain. I'll sometimes say Oliver, sometimes say Wood, sometimes say Marcus, sometimes say Flint. Like, interchangeable. It's the first and last names, Oliver Wood and Marcus Flint. But they, when they shake hands, like, it looks like they're trying to break each other's fingers. Like, they're shaking hands so hard. There is so much animosity and so much riding on this right now. But once they get up into the air, the game starts. Angelina scores right away. Now it's 10-0, and she's super excited. The whole crowd is excited, except for the Slytherins, of course. And Marcus Flint, like, smashes into her and almost knocks her off her broom, which is, of course, dangerous, and if she would have fallen as well. And the crowd is booing, and Marcus is like, oh, sorry, like, I didn't see her. Like, yes, you did. You did see her. And that makes Fred mad. So he throws his beater's club at the back of Marcus's head, and he hits his nose on his broom handle, and he starts bleeding. So Madame Hooch is like, okay, you guys are playing dirty. We get that. So she gives Gryffindor a penalty shot for an unprovoked attack on their chaser, and then Slytherin gets a penalty shot for a deliberate attack on their chaser. And I get it, like, not the best thing to do. I understand why Madame Hooch gave the penalty shot she did, but still, like, he deserved it. So I think it ends up being worth it in the end. But Alicia, she's the one who does the penalty shot, and she does it. She scores it. It's 20-0. And then for Slytherin's penalty shot, Oliver, he saves it. So it's still 20-0. And so that's really great. Lots of enthusiasm. That was a good boost for them. Lots of confidence. I'm glad Oliver did that. He's doing pretty good. And of course, there's still more, like, dirty playing going on. Montague, he's a Slytherin chaser. He, like, swerves in front of Katie, and instead of grabbing the quaffle, he grabs her head, and she, like, spins on her broom. She, like, cartwheels in the air, and she manages to stay on her broom, but she drops the quaffle because Montague grabbed her head. Like, seriously? Of course, like, Madame Hooch is like, okay, that's a penalty shot, and she starts shouting at Montague. And Katie, though, she ends up doing well with that, despite just getting grabbed in the head, and she gets her penalty shot, she scores, and now it's 30-0. And Lee Jordan, like, he's not commentating in an unbiased way, because, you know, like, come on, they're playing dirty, they're cheating, like, he's just not having it at all. And, you know, they're getting close, but Harry still can't catch the snitch. He hasn't, he did see it, but he's trying not to, like, act like he saw it, because then if Malfoy goes for it, like, Harry's in a bad position. Like, if he sees the snitch, he can't make it look like he saw the snitch, because then Malfoy can go for it, and if he catches it, they'll win the cup and the match. And Harry, like, they're only up by 30 points. Like, Harry can't go for the snitch because they need to be up by more than 50 points, remember, to win the match and to win, not necessarily to win the match, but to win the cup. So, you know, he's like, this is a tough position for Harry right now. He had seen the snitch. It was actually, like, in front of one of the Gryffindor goalposts, but he's not going to let Malfoy know that. So he decides to pretend, like, to look very concentrated, and he speeds off towards the Slytherin way, and Malfoy, like, goes chasing him because he thinks that Harry saw the snitch, and it totally works. But one of the bludgers, like, of course, one of the Slytherin beaters, his name is Derek, he hits it towards Harry, goes right past his ear, and the other Slytherin beater, whose name is Bull, like, last name or whatever, he, like, hits the bludger towards Harry, and it goes right past his elbow. So the Slytherin beaters, their strategy must be to try and take out Harry, but the fireball is too fast. Like, he's tricking them, he's swerving, he makes the two Slytherin beaters, like, fly into each other, and Lee Jordan thinks that's hilarious and commentates on all of that, and some more goes on, and he keeps saying stuff, and McGonagall tries to take the megaphone from him. It's not just, like, a megaphone also, it's a magical one, but McGonagall, despite knowing she wants to win too, she has her teacher role on right now and is like, you have to be unbiased, even though I want to win just as badly as you students do, you know. But it's just intense, right? So now the score is 30-10. Gryffindor's in the lead. They're in possession. And it's turning into the dirtiest game that Harry has ever played. Like, it is just, it's intense right now. It is so insane. Lee Jordan is even, like, swearing on, like, in the microphone, the megaphone. Everyone's hearing, of course. Like, it's just dirty. Like, Slytherins are trying anything they can to take the Quaffle. People are getting hit by the Bludger Clubs. Or not the Bludger Clubs, the Beaters Clubs. Like, there's a lot going on. The Snitch has disappeared again. And Malfoy is still keeping, like, he's getting really close to Harry. He's still kind of tailing him a little bit because he knows if Harry sees a Snitch, like, there's a good chance, like, Malfoy will see it too, you know, if he's, like, staying near him. Gryffindor keeps scoring. It is now 50-10. You know, they're still playing dirty. The Slytherins, like, especially. Malfoy is still keeping close to Harry. People are getting mad, and she's even, Madam Hooch is the one that's getting mad too. She's, like, screaming, "You do not attack the keeper unless the Quaffle is within the scoring area." So, of course, that was directed at the Slytherin beaters. And Gryffindor gets another penalty. And it is now 60-10. Then it's 70-10. Like, Gryffindor is just going crazy. So are Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, because they just want Gryffindor to win so badly. But Gryffindor especially is so excited. So Gryffindor now being 60 points in the lead, Harry can catch the Snitch now, because they're more than 50 points up. So Harry's like, okay, like, where's the Snitch? I gotta see it. Malfoy, of course, is still speeding along behind him. And then Harry sees it. He sees the Snitch. And, you know, there's, like, more, another penalty and stuff going on. And Malfoy sees that Harry sees the Snitch. And Malfoy knows that there's no way he would ever catch it because Harry is too good. And Harry, being too good, is also on a firebolt. Like, let's be real here, Malfoy. You don't really have a chance. So Malfoy, Harry gets his firebolt and he, like, is ready to, like, die for it. But then he feels, like, himself being, like, pulled back. And it's because Malfoy grabbed onto the tail of his firebolt and is trying to, like, slow him down. And he's, like, throwing himself forward in the air, like, onto Harry's, like, firebolt. Harry is so angry. He's angry enough to just hit Malfoy, like, pull a Hermione and slap him, right? And slap him off his broom. But he can't reach, you know? And he can't reach him. He's trying to fly away and everything. Malfoy's still putting his full weight to try and, like, pull the firebolt and everything. Madam Hooch is shouting at Malfoy, saying, "Penalty to Gryffindor." And, like, that makes Malfoy realize, like, oh, she saw me. I better slide back onto my Nimbus 2001. Lee Jordan is still commentating, like, screaming, like, "You cheating, lying, filthy." Like, he's saying some things and starting to cuss and everything. And McGonagall is so furious at what Malfoy did here that she doesn't even bother saying anything to Lee Jordan. She's like, "I don't even care. I'm furious." Like, she's shaking with fury. Everybody is so mad that Malfoy did that. And Alicia has the penalty, but she was so angry that she missed it by, like, several feet. So now the Slytherins are starting to get in their head because of what Malfoy just did to Harry. So they're starting to get a little antsy, right? They could have been up by 70 points now. They're only up by 60 still. So, you know, they need to kind of calm down, relax, regroup a little bit. The score is now 70-20. So, you know, it's getting intense. Angelina is about to score as well, and she does. It gets they're now 80-20, but the whole Slytherins are trying to block Angelina as she's about to score. So Harry zooms towards them to scatter them apart and allows her to score. So thanks for that one, Harry. But she scores, and now it is 80-20. Harry, who is flying, like, super, super fast on a firebolt, is, like, zooming around, having to, like, skid to a halt so he can, like, turn and everything. He then sees Malfoy. It makes his heart just, like, stop. Malfoy looks so, like, happy. He has a look of triumph in his face. And he sees that in, like, a little bit above the grass below, like a few feet above the top of the grass, it's a tiny golden glimmer of the snitch. And Harry urges that firebolt like he's never done before, because it looks like he, like, in his head, he's like, Malfoy's miles away and he's about to catch the snitch. But Harry is on the firebolt. He's on the fastest broom in the world. So he urges his firebolt to go, and he's gaining on Malfoy, which is great. And he flattens himself, like, to the broom handle, because he sees that bull, one of the Slytherin beaters, like, sends a bludger towards him. Harry, like, kind of, like, ducks down so that it won't hit him. He knocks Malfoy's arm out of the way, and he pulls out of his dive and catches the snitch. His hand is in the air, and the whole stadium explodes. And Harry's just flying above the crowd. He feels amazing. He has, like, a ringing in his ears. Everybody is absolutely, like, ecstatic. They have never been happier right now. And that was scary, because Malfoy almost had a snitch. I was like, uh-oh. That was a scary moment. And Oliver Wood speeds towards him. He's sobbing. He's, like, half blinded by tears. Like, he just grabs Harry around the neck and hugs him and, like, just sobs into Harry's shoulder. Like, Oliver is so, so happy they won right now. Like, I'm excited for him. But Oliver, you don't even know how happy he is right now. Like, this is what he's been waiting for, like, pretty much his whole life. Fred and George, like, the whole team goes down and onto the grass, onto the field, and they're all excited. And then the whole Gryffindor team, you can hear them all, like, screaming, and even Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw, because they were cheering for Gryffindor, they're going down there and they're screaming and excited and everything. There's, like, a bunch of, like, everyone's just rushing down to the field, so it's just, like, bodies everywhere, everyone's celebrating. Hagrid, he gets there, and he's like, yeah, Harry, yeah, you beat them, wait till I tell Buckbeak. Percy is just jumping up and down like a maniac. He always tries to look so dignified and cool and calm and collected. He totally forgets about that right now. McGonagall is also sobbing, even harder than Wood, because she wanted to win this so badly as well. Remember, McGonagall was a Quidditch player when she was at Hogwarts for Gryffindor, so this is very personal to her too, more than just her being head of Gryffindor House. Like, she was a Quidditch player for Gryffindor as well. And she's, like, wiping her eyes with a giant Gryffindor flag. Ron and Hermione are there. They're just beaming at Harry. They're so excited. They have, like, no words. And Dumbledore is there and on the field holding the enormous Quidditch cup. Wood, who is still sobbing, hands Harry the cup, and Harry lifts it into the air, and he feels as though he could have produced the world's best Patronus. And that is the end of the chapter. It ends on a super happy note. I am so, so, so excited for them in this moment. Like, it's just so fun to read, because I know how they feel, like, with the sports and everything. Like, I know how excited they are and how much this means to them. So it's a really good ending to this chapter, because there's been some rough endings to chapters pretty much throughout this whole book, and they're just going to keep getting rough. They're going to keep getting worse. Like, there's some sad and intense stuff that happened. So this was a good intense thing that happened. And yeah, so that's the end of the chapter. So next week's episode, I'm going to talk about chapter 16. You can email me at theairsofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is There's the Slytherin Podcast. Twitter is at Slytherin Pod. And you can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And make sure you read chapter 16 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban for next week's episode, Professor Trelawney's Prediction. Thank you for listening to The Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host.